Hello, Internet. You are listening to the Making Geeks Podcast, the podcast for makers, dads, and geeks, and you are listening to episode 98. Wow, is right. Yes, and our fabulous co-hosts are here with us today, starting with Mr. Josh Price.
Hello.
With Mr. Mark O'Keefe as well.
Going on.
Mr. Wes Swain.
Good evening, fellas.
And I am Sean Joliker. I don't know why, but it feels like it's been a while since we've actually talked.
It does.
Maybe because we recorded early last week.
It's one day difference? Yeah.
Technically 2 day difference.
Oh. Hmm. Oh, yeah.
So much has gone on.
Wow. Yeah, those extra 2 days add up.
There's one, and then there's like a whole another one after that.
Yeah, it's weird. Temporal anomalies.
So what are you guys working on?
It's been a productive week.
Yeah, Josh has been pumping out stuff.
Yeah, that's looking pretty nice. Slow down.
You're making me look bad, even worse than normal.
I'm sorry. I am in the final stages of my dining room table build. The bottom is finished. So it's got 2 coats of poly sanded in between, sanded down to 220, and now the table's flipped over. And I had to fill like a couple little voids with epoxy on the top. So that's where we are with that. And then once I sand that down, I'll wet sand it, break the grain, or not the grain, but like to break the fibers again. You guys know about that?
No.
Yeah. So when you sand something to like 120, maybe 220, and then you just get it kind of damp. And just like when you get goosebumps, like the hairs kind of stand up, like the fibers stand up. And it gets real rough again, and then you just like mow it over with some 220 sandpaper, and it feels super smooth. Then it's like, it feels like plastic. And then you put your finish on, sand it, put your finish on, sand it, and just keep doing that over and over again until you get as many layers of finish as you want. So I think for the top, I'm probably going to do 3, maybe 4 layers of polyurethane so that you don't get like rings from people's drinks and stuff like that. So this is going to be, I'm going to be patient. Which is not easy for me.
I've screwed up so many top coats because of not being patient.
Yeah.
It's so hard.
So I'm curious for the edges. Are you just doing like a small round over? Are you doing a chamfer? What are you doing for the...
I'm going to chamfer. Yeah, I'm going to do probably an eighth, maybe a quarter. I'm going to do some tests on some scrap, and I'm going to chamfer the top. I was going to put like an inlaid maple, like... band around the inside because the whole tank was rectangular and I was going to offset kind of inward and just do a maple band around that, but I don't think I'm going to do that. That's too much work. That is like, I'm being patient enough. I don't want to add yet another thing, but there is like a long like scar, like void in the walnut, and I want to do an inlay over that. So I was thinking about doing like stitches, like, you know, zigzags where they kind of overlap and make little diamonds. I might want to do that in maple, but I'm still deciding. I want to do it, but again, I'm getting impatient, and so I have to kind of weigh the scope of this project with, like, I just want this to be done because it's something that big, and when you're doing finish, like, I can't do anything else in the shop because it'll get dust in the finish. That's why I hate paint. That's why I hate finish, because it just shuts down the whole other... Yeah.
Sorry.
That's why I hate paint. I hate finish. It shuts down like the entire operation while you wait for that thing just to dry. So I might just do that and just be done. But yeah, it's going to get chamfered and then finished, moved in, eaten on, and then on to something else.
It sounds good. And the bottom looked almost just as good as the top.
Well, the bottom has more sapwood. So the pictures of the bottom on my Instagram, it has the different colors. Like it's got the lighter and the dark. So I made that kind of purposeful. On the top, it has just a couple pieces of sapwood on either end, so on the outsides, but it's more just kind of uniform walnut in between. And so to make sure I had that, I had to point all the sapwood down. So that's why the bottom, the coloration looks so vivid. It's because the top is a little more uniform.
Is there a method for like orienting the board so that the rings go a certain way beside each other, or what is the technique there?
So you want to minimize like the effects or the dramatic effect of the wood expansion. You want to make, it really depends on your boards. So if the grain makes like a rainbow, you don't want to make a bunch of M's. You want to make like a sine curve so okay. that whenever they expand, if it's a bunch of M's, it's all just going to expand into one big concave or one big convex. So if you make them like a sine curve, like one arcs up, one arcs under and so forth, it'll be less dramatic. Yeah. In theory.
Yeah.
Okay. But I've used dowels, a whole bunch of glue, some epoxy in certain areas on the top. Yeah, now it's just kind of hoping and praying this thing doesn't screw up at the very
How
end.
How big is it? Like dimensionally? It's
7 foot long by 41 inches wide, I believe. So it's like an 8-person table. If you had a bench, you could probably fit 12.
Yeah.
I think we
What would that even run? Like if you were to sell something like that, I don't even know. Like $1,000? I don't have any concept.
Mm-hmm. Well, the base I got out of the trash. So the base is actually like an outdoor table. It's aluminum, but it looks almost like the table or the base that I was going to weld up. So it's not ideal, but it's metal. It's lightweight. I repainted it so it looks all nice. But if I was going to weld up the base and do the tabletop, I mean, it's like I would start at probably $1,200.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. Because a lot of work that goes into that table. Because like every step of the way, I'm like, don't screw up. Like, you're going to look nice. Yeah. Like, don't screw up. And then during the glue up, like, the table's huge. And so having to glue all those pieces together and hammer all the dowels, like, put it all together and then put it in the clamps. And it's just this awkwardly massive table. And I'm like cursing the whole time under my breath. And then I finally get all the clamps tight. And I'm like, all right, you're not bowing. And I put some cauls on the front so it doesn't bow out when it's clamped. And I'm like, I'm doing everything right. And I'm waiting for just one magic thing to like, boing, it's just like going to pop in the middle and the whole thing's just going to disintegrate into like a heap. But every little step, I'm like, okay, I think we're okay.
It's like diffusing a bomb.
Yeah, no lie. So once I'm at the point where I'm about to cut the red wire and I can just like put the screws in from underneath and I can just stare at it really quick. I'm like, okay, I'm done. And then just run out of the house and never eat on it again. Yeah, I'm excited. It's stressful, but it's really, really nice looking, and I'm really proud of it so far. But Wes, what are you up to, man? You got laser beams going down.
I do. At the end of last week, I don't think I had it at the time of the recording last week, but I got a kind of cheap, with quote symbols, air quotes, cheap laser cutter on eBay. It was $350. It's one of the Chinese kind of K40 clones, I guess they call it. It's got some room for some upgrades. I got it primarily to try to make some cups to sell at our swim club. We have a swim team with over 100 members. And what do people that are at the pool use? Water bottles. So I thought maybe it might be a good idea to, and that the logo is not copywritten because I looked it up. So maybe I'll do some guerrilla marketing, do a bunch of green water bottles with the logo for, it's like a little imp character. It's like a little devil. We might put like Carrie Swim Club or the Carrie Imps or something like that on there. And figure I might try to sell them. And then, of course, having that tool opens up a lot of other possibilities. I mean, I already had the diode laser, which was 3.5 watts on the X-Carve, which it has the advantage of size. But this one is a 40 watt, so this one has the advantage of power. And I haven't cranked it all the way up yet, but in all the wood I've tested, at like not even up to 50%, it can engrave pretty deep. And it works pretty well. The software is not ideal. I'd have to upgrade the motherboard, basically, on there, the controller board. But it works. It's for learning purposes and kind of risking messing up. I'd rather do it on the cheaper hardware and learn what the limitations are to really appreciate the upgrade and understand what I'm getting and all the terminology. And like all the times I watched William Osmond's video and he says, it's laser time, but then he kicks on the air compressor. I never really understood what the air compressor did until now.
Did you just like keep the stuff away from the lens?
Yeah, so it's called Air Assist, and this machine doesn't have it built in. It's got a lens. It just has a lens there, and the Air Assist is like another nozzle that goes on the end that you have a tube of air getting pumped in, and you have a pinhole dot at the end of the nozzle where the laser beam comes out, but that also it pumps air out kind of in that void as well, straight down into your workpiece. So it does a couple things. It keeps the fumes and the smoke and the debris, like little particulates, from getting on the lens because it's constantly getting blown out, right? So it can't go against the force of like 20 to 40 PSI of air coming out. And it also clears out the ash and the burning, the material you're actually burning on. It clears that out. So it allows you to get a cleaner cut, essentially. And it also, if you're burning some materials at a higher wattage, you'll end up getting like little flame because you're obviously burning the stuff. And this basically is like a constant blowing out of a candle. So you don't have as much flame. And it does like a lot of things like that. So it's been a learning opportunity. And I was very nervous. I'm still kind of nervous about messing with anything, but my heart was racing when like, okay, because it has a water cooler or water chill. A water cooling system, which is basically a bucket with an air or a water pump in it, right? Like kind of like an aquarium thing. But anytime you're dumping anything, you know, electronic that's plugged into AC into a bucket of water, I'm like, is this what needs to be in here? So I've got this. I've got a giant, you know, 40 watt laser that goes up to like 20,000 volts, you know, right beside a bucket of water. It's not like ideal, right? And of course, the manual is like this. It's a strange formatted sheets of paper. Like it's whatever the Chinese standard for sheets of paper. It's not equivalent to ours. And they use like two crooked staples on the edge, and it's like changlish stuff in there. And it's super hard to read. And especially when they're like warning, do not do this, blah, blah, blah. But it's all broken English. I'm like, this is the part that needs to be most legible. So I was like watching tons of videos, like double checking everything. And finally, you know, I got it all working and I managed to align the mirrors in there to get it kind of focused in and everything. So I felt like an astronaut or like a rocket scientist aligning laser beams and whatnot, and actually worked and I didn't blind myself. So far, two thumbs up for $350 and plus some time research and stuff. I mean, it's a good deal so far. So knock on wood, it'll work. I lasered a cup already right before showtime here, and it worked the first try. It's a powder-coated water bottle, so I'm excited.
Cool.
Yeah.
Chum, what have you been up to?
Not a whole lot in terms of making. Just a busy time of year for work. And trying to prepare what I think I'm going to be teaching next year, which is going to kind of relate to a little bit of our topic today, so I'll probably hold off on some of that. That is really about it at the moment. I haven't really gotten any of my other projects, and at this point I probably won't until about summer right now, so I probably won't have a whole lot to add in. But that's really about it. How about you, Mark?
I was playing around with the X-Carve today, and I got a dual tool carving success, and I got the start of my 3D printer enclosure glued together.
Cool.
So I'm happy with that. But now I got to make one of those. What, the enclosure?
Yeah.
I'm going a little bat crap crazy with mine, because I bought a voltometer, an ammeter, all analog. I have a digital temperature gauge, but I don't know if I'm going to use it. I think I might just do an analog thermometer. And I spray painted where the printer is going to go all white, so I can put a light up top and it'll refract inside a little better. And it's all made of wood, and I know people are gonna go, no, you can't put a 3D printer in wood, it's gonna burn your house down. So I have enough room to put a smoke detector up top. All the electronics are sticking out a hole in the back, so the printing area will be enclosed in the front. And then all the electrical connections will be underneath. The only thing I have to figure out is how to hook up the voltmeter and the ammeter properly. Because neither of them came with directions. So I'm not sure how to do that.
How necessary is that?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I'm just curious.
It's for me. That's all. But
I mean, what is it telling you?
Well, the ammeter is telling me how many amps are being used as it's running. And the voltmeter is just another analog gauge to go back and forth when I turn it on.
Nerd reasons.
Yeah, I like analog gauges. And when I hit that switch, I want to see all the stuff go back and forth like the old timey movies when you're about to turn on Frankenstein.
So you want like a steampunk 3D printer?
Kind of, yeah.
I appreciate that, yeah.
Well, I mean, I like data. I thought it was you were trying to track like how much energy it used. So you could include that in like pricing or whatever. Like I love data points, and so I thought that's what you were trying to get out of it.
Kind of. The ammeter, I'm curious as to how much power it runs when I'm right. using it, you know? I've never really known that. I'm sure there's other ways to find out, but they won't look as cool.
True. I had to replace the build plate on the Prusa. So Bob got the new Mark III, i3 Mark III a while ago, and he had one of his old Mark IIs that Bob's when he goes to like level things and get the initial stuff set up, he gets in a hurry sometimes, and the nozzle like dug into the build plate, like through the PEI sheet and like into the thing. He's like, well, that thing I didn't even finish like calibrating. He's like, so you can take it if you want, and you can mess around with it. So I got it all working, and I swapped out the bed the other day, and so it works, you know, fine now. But I got to have a place to put it because it's in a shop. And so it's all dusty and gross. And so I got to build some super clean, containerized, maybe not as steampunk as yours. I just want to keep all the walnut dust off of it.
Oh, there's always the, you ever see the IKEA enclosures?
Yeah. I wonder if I still have some of those laying around.
Those aren't bad.
Hmm. Actually, I'm going to go back on my answer a little bit. I'm not actively building anything, but I am helping my students with a kind of like a robotics competition using some Arduinos with additional like components and shields. So I'm actually getting my jumpstart in electronics a little bit more and coding on the Arduino boards to make something happen. So I'm thinking, okay, let me figure some of those out and think about how to make that work for the pinball machine in the future. And nice. I just got it approved to get a 3D printer in my classroom. Because awesome. Supposedly my district has a whole warehouse full of them, a lot of which are collecting dust because nobody really knows how to use them. So it looks like I'm getting a MakerBot.
Yeah.
Do you know which MakerBot?
No, it's Replicator or something for classroom use. We'll see what happens.
Matt, I was part of the Sea Perch program, which was this robotics program that this middle school did. It was like an underwater robot. It was funded by the Navy. And I went to go like solder some motherboards and like help out and be like a mentor to these middle school kids. And so the science teacher was like, man, I'm so glad that, you know, it's me and a couple other people from Lockheed came. He's like, 'cause we have all this stuff that we just don't know how to use. I was like, well, what's your degree in? He was like, science. I was like, did you want to teach science? He was like, no. Or no, it wasn't in science, something else. He was the science teacher, but he wanted to be a baseball coach. And so like he became the like robotics go-to guy. And they had this whole room full of like MakerBots that was doing nothing. And I was asking one of the middle school kids, I'm like, do you know how to use that? He was like, no. I was like, do you realize that? And it was like fidget spinners were all the rage. Like I walked down the hallway and saw all the kids playing with them. I was like, you know that you could make fidget spinners on that thing by the gross and just start selling them to all the kids in school. He's like, oh, that'd be neat. And then just walked off. Like they had 10 of them just sitting there doing nothing. It's such a wasted resource.
There's an inherent problem with all of this, the schools, that nobody realizes. And I'm wondering if this is something to save for our 100th episode based on some of the things we're going to be talking about. But it's a really big problem that I think we'll address at some point. I don't think right now is the time, but it's something we should talk about. And hopefully, yeah, I can help with.
Even William and Mary had that same problem when I went there to go interview. So it's not like a middle school, high school thing. Like it's the public education system trying to thrust, like, this is technology, and they give it to people and they don't really know what to do with it.
I think the problem is even simpler. I think the problem is simply time.
And the people making the decisions don't know what they're getting too, so they end up buying something that's obsolete, or the company's defunct, or it's like,
well, that's what closed actually source. Happened. Yeah.
Or yeah, in my community college I went to get my associates in simulation and game development, they it really irks me every time I have to tell the story, but they had this. It was like this display that was like a half of a dome display, and you like kind of sit. It's like a desk in the front of it, and you kind of sit into the dome, so it fills your peripheral vision. And they're like, "Oh, our game simulation classes, they'll end up creating, you know, game simulations, blah 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 blah, that use this dome, and it's like $20,000, blah blah blah." Like to chat, like anybody touring the facility, this is something they tout as something that is really awesome. They didn't know that the company, like when they're telling this, they're like trying to advertise to the people touring. They don't tell them that the company's out of business and no one knows how to use the thing, and there's no software they have that works with it. And I was like, seriously, no one uses it? Oh yeah, well, it supports Unreal Engine 2, but we're at 3 now, and they don't have support, and the company's out of business, and there's no drivers, and I'm like,
all the time. It happens terrible. All the time.
Yeah. $20,000 for this one thing that no one uses.
Do you remember what SGI machines were, silicone graphics machines?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had them in Jurassic Park.
Okay, that's where I learned animation, in a lab full of those. $10,000 per workstation. And in 2 years, they were obsolete. My $800 computer would outrun it right now.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, if you look at the monitors in Jurassic Park, it says SGI on them.
Yeah, we had 40 of those in my lab that we worked on. Anyways.
Is that a good transition into what we're talking about today?
I think so. Looking at change, and I think this happens periodically because I think we've covered this at least once before. But because I think it's a really good reflection of our lives, I think we kind of have to kind of talk about it every now and then. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about today is basically certain choices that we actually do you want to phrase it as a choice, a fork in a road? A spork in the road is a...
Spork in the road.
Spork in the road.
I was at Taco Bell the other day, and they don't have sporks anymore. I was very disappointed. That's half the reason.
Mine does.
Ours didn't.
Lame.
Mm-hmm. I digress. Sorry.
Sporks.
So looking at spooning and forking at the same time.
Ooh, dirty.
Indeed.
Yes.
It's a good position.
That's what she said.
In fact.
So what led up to this? I know the last time we kind of talked about this, I was having huge crisis in professions and identity. So is it someone else's turn to take that torch?
Let's throw it all out in the public eye. I got fired recently, so I am currently unemployed for the time being. That's actually what the keyboard was before. I was trying to get an application done before I have to do my unemployment call tomorrow. I got severely burned out at my job, and I probably should have left there a couple years ago. I did a couple stupid things in a row and got terminated. So now I am looking at all of these applications for things that I am kind of qualified for but don't really want to do. And even looking at the qualifications, it's like you need to have this and a bachelor's degree and an associate's degree and this and that and the next thing. And I'm looking at it going, I have 12 years experience in the field. That's all I got. And I don't know what I'm qualified for. I'm not entirely sure how to switch careers, if I even should. I'm kind of just head spinning looking at some of this stuff, and it's a little frightening. So that's ultimately where this week's topic came from today, was another forced life change in the group.
Well, Sean, you're going through a similar semi-forced career change, right?
Yes. It looks like this might be my last year teaching English, which is a huge change for me because that's what I've done for the last 12 years. and it's what I've kind of gained expertise in, you know, during that time. But
is the public education system swapping over to strictly emojis from now on? They're just not doing English anymore.
Yeah,
a dead language.
You know, it's actually
cursive. Might as well be Latin.
You know, it's actually acceptable on the AP test to actually draw pictures instead of write an essay.
Man, I wish I wouldn't have known that.
What?
As long as you are communicating the idea effectively and make sense in terms of the argument that you have to do or whatever the context is for that essay, there are instances where they accept pictures as a form of communication for it or argument.
I hope they do that on the AP biology test. Giggity.
Or AP anatomy.
Man.
So, man, it's... well, Mark, I'm sorry to hear that. Like,
yeah, man.
I don't know.
That was like, that's the
should
thing.
Should we be sorry?
When
it's
happened,
a good thing wrapped in a bad thing, right?
I'm hoping. I have another analogy for it, but I'll save it for off air. I needed to go. I mean, ultimately, yeah, I needed to go. Within my first 6 years, I was denied 13 positions to move up in the company. So, yeah, I was never going to go anywhere. It wasn't a career. It was simply a job. It was a job I was never going to advance in, ever. And so, yeah, it's a good and bad thing. I mean, it's bad because it couldn't have been possibly worse timing. But it's a good thing because it lights the fire under my butt. You know, so maybe... You know, maybe with this time I get enough with the 3D printing and the X-Carve to start something on my own. Maybe I find something that I will actually give me a future. You know, I have no idea at this point. It's just kind of get to the next day and see what happens. But it was a toxic environment. You know, like I said, I was never going anywhere, but also... my body was given out, you know, going up the pole, going in the crawl spaces, crawling around all the time. This was ultimately a company that didn't believe in injury, you know, slow injury. So, a case in point, years ago, my shoulder was going out on me slowly. So for about 6 months, I had to deal with the pain before it finally completely gave out. And, you know, I could feel some of that starting again. I've got tennis elbow right now from some of the things I had to do. Something going on in my shoulder. I have no idea what that is, but it feels like it's going away with treating my elbow. So yay. Mentally, it wasn't good. I dreaded every single moment. And yeah, I mean.
Okay, so let me ask you a simple question that somebody asked me whenever I left Lockheed.
Okay.
Like, all other things aside, what do you want to do?
I want to make things, ultimately.
Okay.
I mean, it goes both ways. Through starting with the making and all that, I found I love working in SolidWorks. You know, I love the CNC, the CAD design. I love sitting in front of the computer and go, okay, here's a square, here's a cube, put some rounds on it, put a hole through it, blah, blah, blah. And 4 hours later, I have a Sentinel, you know. I love doing that. I didn't hate the job itself. You know, it wasn't a hard job. It was, you know, connecting, getting signal from point A to point B and having everything work in the end. You know, that's fun. I'll go do networks again. I made one in my house. It's simple, you know, I don't know how to word it.
Okay. So
network topology.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff, you know, it is what it is. You know, there is no, if there's a problem, it's not hard to figure out where the problem is, but I like making the 3D prints. I like working, making the toys, making the props. You know, there's a ton of stuff I like doing, but ultimately there were a lot of things that just made that job bad for me.
Okay, so all the applications and stuff that you're looking at and that you're filling out, like if there's a pie chart, is a majority of that pie chart making stuff, or is it getting back into doing what you were doing because you're on this in your mind, this like,
well, that's timeline. That's the thing, you know. I mean, the timeline isn't with the pregnancy. That's not, we're taken care of. We got some insurance. Tracy's been taking care of a lot of the paperwork, so she's been helping out just a ton with this. So health-wise, the baby and her are really taken care of. I can, you know, just be more careful and not put any more holes in my body. I'll be all right. Golden handcuffs. But yeah, I think I know what you're talking about there, Donovan. Quick train derailment. I apologize.
The point of that question, yeah. are a majority of your applications maker related, or are they going back to what you were doing?
Oh, well, yeah. I'm sorry. Going back to that. I don't know. I mean, my experience is in that, so that's where I could probably get more money. But do I want to take that pay cut to build up somewhere else? I think that's the more intelligent option, but it's the less money right now, which makes things harder. So I don't really know. I mean, the idea I have right now is, I have in my personal savings, I have around $1,000. So it's put in the applications for anything I can find, whether it's the career change or if it's something along the same lines as I was doing, and use that $1,000 to see if I can make something happen in the time that I have. And if I can make something happen, that's really awesome. And if I can't, well, then I move from there. But it's still, I mean, it's only been, you know, not even 2 weeks. So everything, we're still trying to settle everything with leaving the company and finding out how I'm going to pay for cable. But yeah, I don't know where I'm going to focus on at this point. I haven't really sat down and focused on the job search. You know, it's just been kind of glancing. Okay, that one's good. That one's good. Just so I can have some applications out there and say that I'm looking. But
well, I mean, I was in your situation. I mean, I wasn't fired, but I left. And one of the hardest things in the moment was trying to answer everybody's questions, because I mean, people love you and people care about you, but at the same time, it feels like that's more stress, that people trying just to ask you a question puts this unnecessary sense of urgency. And so there were times where I felt like everything was okay. And I think like things were just going to be, they were going to work themselves out. And the bait that I had in the water was going to fester. And then as soon as somebody were like, well, what are you going to do about this or this or this? I would freak out. And I would go dump like 20 resumes at a time back in the old world where I didn't want to be, just so I could try to calm all of those nerves and calm all of that anxiety down. But that would have given, I think, short-term relief. And even in like I had phone interviews with people back in the old world. And while I was doing it, I'm like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like that's, what am I doing? I'm running back into those. I'll use Donovan's in the chat here on YouTube, his analogy of the golden handcuffs. Like I'm going to run right back into those handcuffs where it's like, oh, I get insurance. I get paid pretty decent. But this is not what I want to do.
Yeah.
And it may seem like any port in a storm kind of deal. But I mean, A, you got to take care of your family. Right? And it sounds like you guys are doing that right now.
Yeah.
But this is an opportunity for you to really to passionately pursue something that you feel is going to get you where you want to go. And then you could be a happier person. You could be a more fulfilled person. And then that will trickle down to your family. And
yeah.
Or you can just cyberstalk YouTube creators. I mean, you can do that too. It's pretty lucrative.
I mean, you've mentioned it before. There was that mentality of, you know, even though you hate it, you go to work, you keep your head down, you know, you provide, you come home, and then you release there. But I just feel like that, and Tracy said it to me before, you know, that there have been times and just stretches of of things happening where I just come home as a miserable, use any description you want. And I don't want to be that, you know. I don't want my daughters to see me come home just miserable, you know?
Yep. Yeah. My dad was that way. And the men in my family have always settled for the easiest thing that's near them. And not that the military is I appreciate my time in the Army, but it was an important storm. It was, I know that the military is going to accept me. I don't have to try really hard to get in. I got to go run. And I'm going to have a job. I'm going to have all the things. And then at a certain point, I'm like, you have given up on your own, like, my pursuit of my goals, because it was easy just to give up and just do the thing and just to play the role and everybody's taken care of. And I can do that until I'm 80 and I can die and everybody can get my insurance money. Or, like, that was the very verticalness of my family tree. I'm like, or I can stop this, like, cycle of regularness and kind of apathy and step out and do what I feel is right for us. Like, it's scary. It's uncharted. I have no idea where I'm going to go.
Yeah.
But I have faith in my abilities. I have faith in my connections. I have faith in my family. And you got to keep trusting in those things. And you got to keep working. And you got to keep talking. You got to keep connecting. And the most random thing is going to fall in your lap. And it's whenever that thing is, I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know what it's going to be. But you're going to look back and you go, like, none of this would have happened if I was still work. Can we say the name of your company now since you don't work there anymore? Okay.
Wait till next week until I know I have unemployment.
You've been like, none of this would have happened if I was still working at AOL. We'll call it that.
Good call.
So it sucks right now. You're looking around in a hole that has no possible outcome, and eventually it's just going to start chipping away, and then you got to keep going. And you know that, well, I know that all of us, we're here to help in any way that you would like us to.
Oh yeah. I mean, just this, I mean, the podcast isn't just the podcast. It's a weekly therapy session too. You know, we all get to talk and vent and there's support from all corners. So I know you guys are here, and you guys are always good to talk to and bounce ideas off of, and I'm truly thankful for the three of you guys. But yeah,
we'll get out in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's definitely it's that's the thing, like, it's so confusing. There's so many emotions that they're just like, it's good, it's bad, it's horrible, it's not that bad, you'll be okay, you're gonna die, you know. It's just everything all at once, and it's just like, I don't know which way to go. But
it's a tough position to be in, and I think that a lot of people can relate, and a lot of people have, and Josh talked about it a little bit, and I think I did it to a degree too. I turned down my dream job. I had the opportunity to go into what I thought was my dream job, and I turned it down because I wanted to play it safe. I wanted to do something dependable. And it took me 12 years to get back to the point where I think now that I'm going to be able to start doing what I think I want to do. And I think I'm just lucky in that sense. I don't think that there was any reason why that this should have happened this way. But I had given up on everything that I wanted to do. But the only thing that got me through was giving myself carrots on a stick that I could constantly chase, that there is something better. And it started with making my first Instagram account and starting Geek Builders and doing all those things. I hated my job before, you know, even though it's considered a professional level job, it's something that I went specifically to school for. I was settling even at that time. And it wasn't until I gave myself that additional carrot on the stick that I felt that my life started improving. And so I think you've talked about it before too, where you started really getting into SolidWorks and 3D printing and CNCing. That became your carrot on the stick.
Yeah.
And now I think you have the opportunity to not just chase that carrot, but finally eat it.
Oh yeah.
And then set up another carrot on a stick to chase, because you have to constantly do that.
Well, see,
to
the
keep
other
yourself going.
To touch on what that and what Josh said before, there's also that little there's the voice in the back of your head. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the Christopher Titus stand-up, but he has a bit called the and I will not use his terminology, but the inner idiot.
Yes.
Where for every, for lack of a more family-friendly term, every decision you make is going to lead to failure. Everything you do is going to lead to failure. You're going to let everyone down and just you're going to be a laughingstock, and it's just that constant trying to bind and gag him in the back of my head. Just, you know, shut up and keep moving forward. Trust that, you know, something good will happen if you work hard enough at something that you love. And that's also the self-sabotaging aspect of, you know, fighting through the whole situation. You know, take the safe thing. The safe thing's good. The safe thing will make everyone happy, but you will be miserable. You're already miserable. You know, it's so many things to not trip on and to keep moving forward. It's hard.
Definitely.
And when you think of your kids looking back on their own childhood and imagining what they, you know, how exactly they perceive you.
That's
like, yet what another is the idealic version of the dad that you want to impress upon them and have in their mind, you know? So for sure.
Yeah. That was huge into my decision to go. Cause I mean, I look at my dad and he's an amazing man and taught me amazing things in my life, but he settled hard and he settled openly. And every time I talked to him about things, I mean, when we were talking about leaving Lockheed, he's like, what are you going to do? He would ask, like, you know, dad, question, what are you going to do about insurance? What are you going to do about money? What are you going to do about this? Those things, they were, yes, it's a question that had an answer, but it felt like it was like, no, you should stop all of those crazy, like, scary, adventurous ideas and just go back to doing what you're doing. And even now, I get emails from my father-in-law about aerospace jobs down at Cape Canaveral where he works. And so it's family that are like, come back to the safe thing and come back to your polo shirts and your lanyard full of ID tags and things. And like, I don't want to do that anymore. Like, you can change your trajectory in life. And this is a pivotal moment. And I wanted my kids to know, like, we're doing something dramatic right now and you don't understand it. And maybe one day you'll see it and hopefully appreciate it. Instead of me looking back on my dad going like, hey, let's go do this thing. He's like, no, we can't do that. All right. Now he talks about buying this local Goofy Golf establishment that we have down on the beach. It's been there for like 80 years. I'm like, good, go do it. And he's like, no, I probably won't. And he's that kind of person that's like, oh, this would be a great idea if we did this. He's like, they should make this or they should do this. I'm like, you can do those things. No. And so just that like idea that you have the gumption to step out and, yeah, I mean, you were kind of forced into this scenario, but it's now what you make of it.
Yeah,
exactly. Is going to prove your kids, like, I don't have to settle for convention. I can step out and actually do what I feel is going to make my world better.
And that's the thing where I feel a little bit thankful for. You know, the Thea is still too young to really know what's going on. So hopefully it'll be a story later on in life when if she has doubt, I can break out. Let me tell you when I got fired when your sister was about to be born and everything worked out great, you know, and I hope it's one of those stories. Everything's fine and we're all happy and you have everything you can think of. But
see, but even that is relative. I mean, because in your mind, you have an idea of what, like, success is going to be whatever jobs are. I mean, if they had 10 people lined up outside your door ready to hand you a job offer, you have in your head, like, which one is the best one. And the best one is based off a metric. Like, it's either money or, you know, how you're going to keep the lights on in your house. And so, like, it's based on convention. And so when we went into the RV, like, we toured around, we were pretty much hobos, but we were all together. We were safe. We had a kind of goal. We didn't have any debt. So, like, success, you have to think outside a success box.
Like, I mean, ultimately, I mean, we've talked about success before and failure, but ultimately, I just want to not worry. You know, that's all I want. It's if it's less money, if it, you know, that's, I just want to make sure everything can be taken care of, and I'll be happy with that.
Tiff used to talk about, because I would freak out, and I still do about a lot of things. Not as much anymore, because like you're saying, I think we're kind of in that homeostasis period. But she was like, you just need to take a breath. And I'm like, I can't take a breath yet. And
I've done that with my wife.
Yeah. So
recently,
right now, like it got for us, it got really bad. Like we were dipping hard into savings and I got freaked out and just started throwing out resumes like I'm sure you're kind of doing right now. And you feel like you're just bottled up. And just that relief or that making sure everything is taken care of, like you're talking about. Like when we signed on the house here and I got the keys, I sat in the Jeep and like I took that big like burden off my chest breath. And I'm like, that was the moment that I knew that we were okay. And even now, like I scrap for every dollar that we end up getting. Like I work with Bob. Yeah. But every day I go in there and I earn my value. I make myself valuable. I don't rely on the fact that I work for Bob because, you know, he could, God forbid, die in a plane crash coming back from England and I got to figure stuff out. So I'm still scrapping to make sure that my people are taken care of. But we have roofs on our head. There's food in the refrigerator. Everybody is relatively happy because there's a couple of them are two and three, so they're never happy. But but you can take – you will be able to take a breath. But, I mean, it may end up like – we had to move. We had to be flexible. And I had to be able to say yes to a lot of things that if you were still stuck in real convention, like you wouldn't want to say yes to. And this is about capitalizing on opportunities that were presented to us.
Yeah. Joel's hiring.
Oh, Atlanta?
Yeah. See, I mean, like the thought of moving is definitely up there. We're, everything's kind of up in the air. It's all really. We're trying to look for some government jobs around here right now just to see because, hey, pensions are cool.
But, Sean, to get to your point, like about capitalizing on opportunities. So is this where you want to be? Like I know you're at a scary – I don't even know if it's scary. You're at a fork in the road from where you were, what you've been doing, to now like a dramatic paradigm shift into what you're being asked to do.
Yeah, there's – a really weird turn of events. So when I was talking a couple of minutes ago about hating my job became really routine. And I think part of it was a lot of personal issues worrying about my leg. And it wasn't just work. It was a big combination of things. But then I actually found some stability. I found my kind of like that carrot on the stick. I got thrown into teaching AP English that I had never planned on doing because I knew nothing about how to do any of that. But really kind of found my footing and found a lot more enjoyment out of what I was doing at that level. And then I'm thrown another curveball. And a lot of it was my doing because I opened my mouth. I said I could do something. And that stuck into somebody's brain because I said, oh, yeah, I can teach some basics in computer science. Oh, yeah, I can teach animation. And those things stuck. And nobody else that teaches at the school right now has any of those qualifications that they can prove in terms of like work history and other things. They might have some knowledge of it, but because of the way education works, you have to be able to prove with work history and other things, which I was able to scrap together and do. Much to my surprise too, I didn't even know if I had enough to do it, but I pulled it off. And I thought I was just going to be teaching animation, which would have been fine, but no, now I'm going to be teaching computer science and animation. And that is... that's a little bit daunting for me, especially since I found out today that it looks like every freshman coming into the school that I teach at is going to be going through my computer science class.
Nice.
No, not nice.
Now, was the computer science curriculum established before? Was another teacher doing it? Or are you the only teacher doing it? Or
I'm the only one doing it at my school. We're a fairly small school. We only have like 1,300 students. Yeah, so I'm the only one teaching it. I had curriculum and all that stuff already. It wasn't much of a problem.
Mm.
But it'll be interesting with, 300, 400 freshmen? How the hell is that going to work?
Trial by fire.
I don't even know how this is going to work yet. But I guess I'll figure it out.
What part are you most nervous about?
And
when we were being taught
right
computer science in school, like – It's on like Apple IIs and things. Like these kids nowadays, it's not some foreign scary thing that you just play.
It still is.
You know, Doom on.
No, it still is, because you have to remember that most people are users. They don't think about the back end of how things work. It's about teaching logic and thinking in a way that a lot of people still are not really set up to do. You know, it doesn't matter how early you introduce coding and stuff. You might introduce some of these early, you know, logic puzzles, but it's still not real coding. It's still not setting somebody up to want to do this for the future, which is actually what they want. And part of the nervousness is that...
That's not a realistic goal. If every freshman has to come through your class, do you expect 100% of the people that graduate from that school to go be computer scientists?
No, but what happened in education was that there was a couple reports released and everybody got scared. So then 30 years, the biggest industries are going to be ones that actually are hiring coders or have good knowledge of computer science. Because there's a lot of jobs going away when you look in the future, so they want to start preparing for things now. And the big part of the puzzle has always been misaligned in this, is a lot of people still just don't want to do it. It's not even a complete thing about ability. There's people that just don't want to do it. And there's a huge push to get more diversity, more equity, more gender representation in the field. And so the school districts are doing what they can to try to fill this gap, but there's still going to be a deficiency. It's not going to end up the way they think. And one of the things that I do like about what I'm going to be going into is I'm going to hopefully be in some of those meetings with the district to try to adjust their point of view and their expectation about what's going to come out of this. And that goes for the animation thing too, because we're setting up a pathway at our school to go through traditional animation, digital 2D animation, 3D animation their junior year with me, and then I'm also going to possibly be teaching game design senior year, because we're trying to set up these career pathways so the students come out with a certificate saying, hey, I did these assignments. That's really about it. And hopefully lead to a career somewhere later on. So I'm going to
portfolio building?
In a matter of speaking, yes. But because it's all through the lens of education, it's always a little bit skewed compared to what the actual job force kind of expects.
Are they going to have different pathways? Like one's more of a coder pathway, one's more of an artistic direction, so that like is it culminate in the senior year of like a group project to like take a coder and an artist and come up with like a game demo? Or is it just all of them going to get a little bit of both, or what?
That's what I have to fix. Because I understand the difference and nobody else sees it. Yeah. Everybody sees these things as like these vertical pillars that don't crisscross. But man, it's a plate of spaghetti. And you have to rely on all these different skills. And it takes so much time to do any of these things that nobody fully realizes. And that's why I've had constant headaches for the last week trying to figure out how am I going to manage this and start managing expectations with the district. So I'm going to be... kind of a student again for the next year, where I kind of brush up on all these skills. I know everything conceptually. I think I know enough to teach it, but I'm also going to have to demonstrate it again. So I have to, you know, dust off some old memories and skills.
Bring out those polygons.
That's right.
So are you excited about the challenge? Is that where some of the trepidation is?
Part of the trepidation is the extra time I'm going to have to put in. I've gotten kind of set in my ways with English that I don't have to put in a lot of extra time because I already know all the content. But that's not the case with these new things that I'm teaching. So I've gotten set into my way of life. I really like the way things are right now. And this is a huge disruption. And it's taken away from the Geek Builder stuff that I want to do, at least for the time being. But I want to see how I can kind of roll it back into everything else that I'm passionate about right now. Because while I like the idea that I'm going to be able to teach this stuff, I'm teaching it for somebody else to do. I want to be doing it. I don't want to just instruct somebody else how to do it.
You think this is going to rekindle more of a drive to build tangible things with your hands because you're going to be working in the digital space much more?
I thought about that. But you'll have to ask me in a couple months. Sorry. My kids don't have a volume control.
Well, I'm excited for you, man.
Yeah, I am too.
I'll let you know.
It sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
I'll let you know by next November if I'm still excited.
You said you have another 2D animation teacher there, or no? Is that you too?
No, we have a weird situation where we have two art teachers, but one's taking on more the mantle of the 2D animation, and he has legitimate background in it, and was supposed to work on The Simpsons, but he turned down the job. But he has really good knowledge of the traditional side of animation, a lot of the hand drawn stuff. He's learning a little bit more of the 2D digital using a program called Toon Boom, but he doesn't have any of the knowledge of 3D like I have. Hopefully we make it work.
Are you fighting imposter syndrome? Like, this is a lot being placed on your shoulders, and you're like, are you worried that you won't be able to deliver what they're hoping that you can?
No, because I know that I always push through in those situations, and I'll learn. I always do. It's just tough because art is such a subjective thing. So on my Instagram mm-hmm. story, I've been doing a lot of sketching and a lot of drawing, and it's, you know, I know it's okay. I know it's marginal. I know it's not great, but I have to make sure that I have to maintain my skill at a certain level, I think, to make myself still seem qualified or legitimate in what I'm teaching. And right. that's kind of what I'm trying to redevelop right now. It's been a while. I'm a little bit rusty on some of these things.
Yeah, but it's exciting to see what the kids that you're going to get that aren't rusty on it, like what they're going to make. Like you said, they have to go through this career path, and by the time they get to you, you know, they've already done 2D animation, and they've already had more of a recent experience doing a lot of things. So they have, I don't know, they're brushed up, if you will, using art puns, but
mm-hmm.
to a degree, we have a very interesting mix of students and talents right now, and I think that they are all just as stretched as the teachers because they're being pulled in so many different directions. So even though they might find a huge interest and even a talent in art, the counselors and everybody else are pushing them to take multiple AP classes at the same time. I don't know when any of my students sleep right now.
Practice. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. I have students that are doing short films. I have students that just went to Washington, D.C. that just filmed for PBS Student Reporting Labs for the big march that happened there. Yeah, it's pretty crazy with how much all the students are doing right now. And then trying to add something like computer science or animation on top of that, which, right. I mean, their time sucks. They're black holes of time and how much time you can spend on any of these things. And I'm thinking, And I'm thinking for 3D animation, and Wes, you know this probably even more than I do because you have a little bit more even professional experience, that I'm doing basically a survey course of 3D animation, hoping that they will produce something at the end of the class.
Yeah, each one and they have to put more time in.
Right, each one of the components are an entire year.
Sure.
Texturing, shading, modeling, and then animating itself. Those are completely separate jobs, but I have to teach them the basics of all of that in one 36-week run.
It's difficult to expect them to get enough experience while just in the classroom environment to be able to produce something that's worth it. I mean,
it's accurate.
It takes way more but practice. It's like practicing for a sport. Like they have to practice outside of class to be able to do well in the class / at the game, you know? So I think like a lot of those like modeling and animation, those are all kind of skills they have to develop, and it might not be enough to take it, you know, for 45 minutes every week or every other day or whatever it is.
They're going to have 5 hours of class time a week.
5 hours. Yeah.
That's it. And a lot of them probably don't have systems powerful enough to
run right, at home. Stuff. Yeah.
And 3D animation in itself is one of the most complex mergings of engineering and art that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Technical art. Sure. You're going to have students that like will lean more towards the technical side or the art side, and it's rare to get one that loves to do both, you know, so it's kind of hard to write a curriculum that appeals to both when, in my experience, people kind of go one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean,
like a sliding scale percentage wise.
I already know how it's going to work because my when I went through my animation program, it was actually the same issue. Mm-hmm. Is we had engineering students and we had artists, but all trying to do the same thing. So I'm going to hopefully take what I learned from that experience, because I actually ended up teaching some classes in the program and adapting that for my classroom too. So there's going to be some instances where basically they're just following directions to get an end result, and then others where they'll actually have to critically think and produce something.
It's exciting.
It'll be interesting. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Once you get to the game design part, let me know. Maybe I can call on some of my Epic contacts to do like a voiceover IP, like conference call thing or something. I don't know.
Because I have, like with the actually, class. I have no knowledge of any of that.
Sweet.
But you know a guy who knows some guys.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, we are even less removed now from some bigger names too.
Kevin Bacon?
Even even better than Kevin Bacon. Who wants to do who wants to talk about it? I think we should.
Better.
And kind of
just do it.
I think
that's hard. Better than Bacon. That's hard.
I think that Berkey we should make this problems with I think this. We should make this our collective geeking out.
I agree.
Wes, why don't you do the honors, since you're the one that kind of happened upon it?
Well, in the most recent Make email publication, it's like a newsletter going over the latest happenings and upcoming happenings. And they have an area in there talking about Maker Faire in Bay Area in 2 weeks. And in the same paragraph, they're talking about Laura Kampf and some other folks in the 100th anniversary or 100th episode of the Making Geeks podcast. We're going to record live on stage. And the immediate sentence after that, they mention Adam Savage. So we're adjacent, we're neighbors, paragraphically speaking, to Adam Savage. So that's pretty exciting.
Yes.
We're mentioned in the same breath, essentially, as Adam Savage. So it's pretty exciting. It's pretty awesome.
I was actually even more impressed and kind of geeking out about it, because there's only a couple of people mentioned in that article.
And out of all the people they could have lived.
Everybody they could have mentioned, they mentioned the podcast.
Yep. Grant Thompson and all, you know, tons of Peter Brown, Bob Claggett. I mean, you name it.
A lot of times lately, it really does feel like we're moving more in the right direction, you know?
Yeah.
Like a lot of good, it's nice to see some of this stuff, you know?
Moving the needle?
Yeah.
Only took 100 episodes.
That's hard work and persistence.
But I think we have a dedicated, you know, following and loyal fan base as, you know, strong and mighty.
We've provided some pretty good consistency.
Even if they are small.
I'm not saying we weren't doing good. I just didn't think we were doing Adam Savage good.
Well, let's not put the cart before the horse there. But
my friend's like, can you get me an autograph? I'm like, dude, I don't even know if I'm going to see him, let alone meet him.
I think there's a misconception because of the proximity of our names, like we were doing something together. And you got to read a little bit closer. That's not actually what it's saying.
No, we theoretically,
because if it was, we'd be taking a completely different approach to this conversation right now.
Oh, God.
We will be in the same geographical area, probably.
I'd be getting prescriptions for anti-anxiety medicines.
I think our discussion would be, okay, how do we make sure we don't scare him away?
See, my headspace has been, I know we collectively know enough people that have been to Adam Savage's cave or who know Adam personally. Like, how can we make this happen?
We know somebody that actually did a full tested video with him.
Who's going to be on the show next week. That was a good segue.
Yes, so make sure you guys turn in.
You get a gold segue coin today.
Nice.
What episode might that be, Josh?
99? Is it 99?
Yeah, Infinity War spoiler cast, right? Infinity I don't know if we should War do that spoiler. Live, though. I don't want people to stumble in the YouTube and accidentally get spoiled. Yeah,
I don't think we should do that one live.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Be dangerous. Because you wouldn't be able to, like, intercept every new person that comes in and, like, say, spoiler warning. You know, you don't know who's coming and going.
That's a good point. We should not do that one live. But, yeah, Daryl from The Broken Nerd is going to be on just like he said he was going to the first time he was on the show. And I just watched it again today.
Go to see it again tomorrow.
It holds up. Man, it holds up. Such a good movie. And I can't wait to talk about it.
Well, we would love to
hear. I mean, when Batman dies. So. I saw that meme and I had to steal it. That was hilarious.
All right, so we'd love to hear from all of you. Please check out our website, makinggeeks.com. Check out the contact page. Send us questions, requests for the show, anything you like. We've gotten some really great letters and feedback from people lately. We really appreciate it. So we do look forward to hearing from you. And go ahead and check out the homepage of the site where you can listen to all of our past episodes. Check out all of the wonderful guests we've had on this show. And remember, that's makinggeeks.com.
And you can find us across all the social medias on... Wow, brain fart. I'm sorry. On MySpace. Yeah, MySpace.
Your and, local newspaper.
And... find us you. In the yellow pages. What was the one before MySpace? Friendster. you can find us on all the social medias on Instagram at Making Geeks Podcast and on Twitter and Facebook. God almighty. At Making Geeks.
And we're also existing in the happy land of Patreon. We have a Patreon page at patreon.com/makinggeeks where people trade their hard-earned money to help support the show and keep us rolling on here. And we definitely appreciate it. I'd like to thank our top patron, Mr. Seth Williams, for his patronage, along with all of our other patrons. Thank you guys so much for your support. We wouldn't be able to do this Maker Faire that's upcoming without you. We thank you very much. Patreon.com/MakingGeeks.
And these last couple episodes have been live on our YouTube channel. So if you go back and watch those, the graphics that are on there, Brent from is the Broken Antler Workshop and Kentucky Jeep Guy on Twitch made those. So we'd like to thank him very much, Brent.
And super cool.
Brent pointed out
that was really awesome.
We are in now a grammatical battle off on any type of social media. So good at you. It's time for me to go back at Brent and pick apart his grammar. He got me after I got him first. So now it's war. But if you want to learn more about us individually, you can find us everywhere on the internet. You can find Wes's work at Geeksmithing on YouTube and Twitch and geeksmithing.com. You can find Sean's work at geekbuilders.net. You can find Mark at asylum-3d.com, and you can find my work at thepiworkshop.com. We'd like to thank everybody for hanging out with us. And just like Mark said, we'd like to thank you all for your constant support. And Mark, again, we hope that you know that we are supporting you, man, in any way that Absolutely. We can. And Sean, if you want to scream about a bunch of dumb freshmen, then we'll just turn the mics off or hit stop, and then you can rant about their idiotness all you want to. Because that's what this is all about. We are very happy that you guys listen along with us, but this is a therapy session for the four of us. And if you find yourself in the next, 2 weeks? On the 19th. Man, so exciting. On the 19th of May, San Mateo, California, on the Content Creator Stage, 11 a.m., San Mateo, California, at Maker Faire. Come hang out with us. It's going to be epic.
Yup.
Definitely.
So everybody, we hope you have just as fantastic of a week as we have all had. And tune in every Saturday for another show. I messed that order all up.
That's cool.
Have a fantastic week. Anyway.
See you guys. Bye. Later. Can everybody out there in TV land hear us?